All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Here, welcome to the show. Please be seated. We got a great show for you as usual. And for a long time, tech has somewhat been indifferent on Washington and politics, and increasingly have come to realize just how relevant it can be to their business model. And so you've seen an increasing involvement of the tech community in the political process. And just a few weeks ago, we actually had a guest talk about there's a Silicon Valley group called Engine that even did a scorecard of the major presidential candidates on tech issues. And so in light of that, and the fact that we have the upcoming California primary, which will decide the Republican and Democratic races, and there's an open seat for the U.S. Senate, which will, obviously have a very important role as the senator for Silicon Valley, one of them. That is a primary for that, and so we thought it would be a good idea to focus on that as the primary approaches on June 7th. And with us, we have a very good person who knows a thing or two about California politics, Dario Frommer. He's a partner at Akin Gump, a powerhouse firm in Washington and here in California, and he's the former majority leader of the California State Assembly. He's also a senior advisor for Governor Gray Davis and former chairman of the California Transportation Commission, which I believe he still serves on. Dario, are you with us?
Good morning. How are you, Bennett?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Really thrilled to have you. And in terms of you've been out of politics for a couple of years. This has been a really crazy year. Do you ever think, thank God I'm out? Thank God it's not. I wasn't involved back then.
Well, so there's no 12-step program for politicians, so we always want to be in the mix. But I have been fascinated by the turn of events this year. You're absolutely right. It's a completely crazy year in terms of political conventional wisdom.
I'm reminded of that saying, the Chinese saying, "May you live in interesting times," which is also supposed to be a curse. And, it's because it's double-edged sword, and that's kind of what we're going through this year. So we have a big race coming up on the presidential side, clearly. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us about what you're doing now?
Well, I'm back in private practice, and I am, as you said, with Akin Gump. Our public law and policy group is very well recognized as one of the top in the country, and we deal with all kinds of fascinating issues, dealing with legislative issues, regulatory issues, public policy. It's never dull. But we help people negotiate and navigate government, and help them to be creative in how they engage and try to get some good policy results as well.
I noticed you have some former senators from both sides of the aisle, so that must make some interesting involvement at some of your gatherings. But I don't want to make you reveal any internal stuff. So this presidential race, do you have a sense of is California? Because usually by the time it gets to California, it's over, and so now finally, we have a situation where California is going to have a major say in this primary. Do you have a sense whether Californians are really engaged in this primary?
I think they are. We've seen a huge uptick in registration, as reported by the Secretary of State, largely Democratic registration. So I think there's interest in this race. I mean, obviously, there's still a primary contest going on in the Democratic Party, which is odd because many people thought that would be the Republican Party would have a bitter fight to the end. So I think there's going to be a lot of interest. We have a U.S. Senate seat. We have had no vacancy in that seat since 1992. And so I think there's a lot of reason for folks to come out and vote, and particularly on the Democratic side.
And so do you have any doubt that after June 7th, the nominee will have be wrapped up on both sides?
Well, you have to look at the math, obviously. Hillary Clinton is about 80 delegates short of clinching the nomination, while Bernie Sanders would have to come up with about a little more than 900 delegates to do it. So the math is going in her favor. You know, having said that, Senator Sanders is still running a spirited campaign, as is Secretary Clinton. This is very similar to what we had in 2008. Hillary Clinton, and I was a superdelegate for her in 2008, she kept going right to the end, even though as we got into June and May, it seemed more apparent that Senator Barack Obama would be the presidential nominee. So I think Sanders is doing the same thing, and I think that it's good. I think it's a good, healthy competition. The real test, obviously, is after June 7th would be the last few primaries. You know, we have to bring everyone together and move forward to look at the general election.
Now, there are some people who believe that there's been somewhat of a shift in tone by Senator Sanders, that he's actually gotten nastier as we've gotten closer to the end. Do you believe that could be a problem? And do you think, you know, once June 7th comes, the gloves will, you know, people will go back to the corners and come out in a more civil manner?
Well, we can only hearken back to sort of previous election contests. And as I said, in 2008, Secretary Clinton competed right to the end. And going into the convention was sort of quiet on her intentions. But I remember being there in 2008 and being a superdelegate, and she called everybody in, and Secretary Clinton said, you know what, Obama is our guy. I want all of you to support him. And, you know, it was a nice way to do that. I think at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that Senator Sanders will do the same thing here. It's on him to help unite the party. But it's also on Secretary Clinton, because Senator Sanders, I think, has spoken to a lot of the anger in the electorate, much as Donald Trump has. People are very distrustful of institutions and of the political parties. And I think his narrative here gives Secretary Clinton an opportunity to really talk about those issues, talk about uplifting people, making sure that folks are getting jobs that pay well, talk about the loss of a decade where people lost a lot of money and a lot of wealth, middle-class people getting really decimated by this economy. I think together they can actually unite the party and talk about issues that in November are going to be very salient for voters.
And then on the Republican side, I mean, they don't have to unite, but I think there's a certain, I don't know, tentativeness about what this convention is going to be like in Cleveland.
Well, it's looking, you know, a few months ago, everybody thought it was going to be a complete circus. And now it's looking like it's going to be much more staid. Certainly, you're not going to have challenges over the delegate count. Donald Trump is pretty much there now. And I think the question is, you know, some people say they're not going to show up for the convention. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of the party is going to unite behind Trump. Not everybody. But, you know, he's going through the motions right now of being an outsider who's won the nomination and having to go and make peace with the establishment while still keeping his base fired up. And he's got some time to do that. So I don't know that the Republican convention is going to be a big circus event. Certainly there will be some tensions there, and it's going to get played out, but I don't see it as a major deal for them.
Now, you know, one thing that when I look at this is, you know, the Democrats have superdelegates. You yourself mentioned you were one in 2008. Do you, in light of what has happened this year in the Republican process, do you think Republicans wish they had superdelegates? And then on the flip side, do you think Democrats should keep them?
I'm sure the Republicans wish that they had superdelegates. And you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, most of the delegates are still going to be drawn from the primary and caucus process. You're also providing a way for elected officials in the party to participate. So it's a balance, and it cuts both ways. But I do think that at the end of the day, it's a good process, and I don't think, you know, we might tweak it a little bit. Maybe we make superdelegates a little less important, but I don't think it's a bad outcome.
And I actually, the very, very first race on the presidential level I got involved in was actually Ted Kennedy's in 1980. And that's where the whole superdelegates came from, because you had a nominee who had the, you know, who had the math. He had delegates, enough delegates to win, but there was a high level of a doubt about whether he could win. And unfortunately, under that system, there's only one way to go, and that was potentially off the cliff. So I think in that respect, there's value to having some party input to steer the party potentially from a disaster. But I imagine that's why the Republicans might find the appeal. So what happens next in terms of this process? There's going to be at the convention, there's the platform committee, and we've already seen Sanders announce some of the people who'll appoint on his part to the committee. Would you have any reaction to those appointments?
No, I really don't. I mean, I think that Senator Sanders has made it clear that, he wants the nomination. If he can't get there, then I think he has to think, how can I influence the party? And really, what I hope he's thinking about is, how can I bring the energy, if I'm not the nominee, how do I bring the energy and some of the issues to the party in a way that the party can wrap around them and we can not only unite, but have action on them, should we have a Democratic president. I think that's what he should be thinking about. I think he can be very positive influence. As I said, I think Bernie Sanders in this has brought up a lot of good issues. And both candidates have. I mean, there's not a huge amount of disagreement between them fundamentally. But those are issues that I think will continue to resonate in the fall, and then they need to be talked about, because we've got to pick up this contingent of people who are just disaffected all over the place. So I would hope he's thinking about it as a positive role, not as a spoiler, not as someone who's going to make, as one of his advisors said, we're going to make it maybe messy. That's not productive. Productive is being a part of the conversation, but making sure that those issues are addressed, and making sure that the party is talking about those issues in fall and reaching out to his supporters. I mean, they're significant.
Now, it's interesting in terms of one of the players is Tad Devine, who, shout out to my high school when he graduated, 15 years before me or whatever many years it was, 5 years, I don't know, something like that. Any event, he's older. That's all I'm going to say. But he was involved in the Gore campaign, and Gore had a major split with some of the left, and that jumped on the Nader camp. Susan Sarandon, for example, was part of the, Nader, saying that, there's no difference between Al Gore and George Bush, which in hindsight sounds very ridiculous. But, and now he's inside the Sanders camp, and I'm wondering how that, how that must play in his head about, clearly he's cognizant of where this can go. And so I hope that, being the seasoned person he is, having worked on the Kerry and Dukakis campaigns as well, that he will steer his people off away from the cliff.
Well, you would think so, as he's been, both the insider and now the outsider, that he can play that game well. But at the end of the day, it's up to Senator Sanders. What direction, what tone does he want to set? What does he want to accomplish? And as I said, I think they have an opportunity, even if they can't get the nomination, to be a positive influence on the party if they choose to do that.
And one other thing is that he has a future beyond this. I mean, one, he's running for re-election. But two, I mean, this he could have a prominent role in the Senate if there's a Clinton presidency.
Absolutely. I mean, if the Democrats take the Senate back, which many people expect that they will, and you're back in the majority, even if he doesn't become president, Bernie Sanders can play an important role in a lot of that stuff, and to be a voice with other like-minded Democrats like Elizabeth Warren and others. So I think he's got to be you know, mindful of that, and you know, that's part of the conversation that he needs to think through right now.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the California primary, and we're going to talk about the Senate race that has an interesting matchup between Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez. After these messages, you're listening to Cranberry Radio.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Is buying something that is made in the USA important to you? How do you know that it really is made in the USA? Certified Inc. is the only supply chain audit company on the planet which qualifies country of origin labeling. If it's important to you as a consumer to know where the products you buy and use in your own home come from, then it's also important for your customers. Visit us at madeinusa.net and find out more. Go to madeinusa.net because it's that important.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Free and unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Are you paying too much for your paid advertising, or have you quit altogether because it seemed like a huge waste of money? Studies show that companies waste 25% of their PPC spend on average. The web marketing experts at WMETraining.com can show you how to make your AdWords account a lean, mean, converting machine. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your skills to the next level, we have a class for you. Contact the web marketing experts at WMETraining.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
We're back. We're talking with Dario Cromer, former Assembly Majority Leader for the great state of California. And we're just talking about the upcoming primary on the presidential side in California. Dario, do you have any predictions or recommendations for vice presidential selections for either party?
Well, it's, you know, the vice presidential is a lot of factors go into that. One of them is if you look at the map, and this turns out to be an election that's more like 2008 or 2012, you know, you want to look at swing states. Right. And you want to look at who potentially can buy you votes and support in swing states. So if I'm Donald Trump, I need someone who's going to help me there. I also need someone who can help me unite the party. And Donald Trump, I think, needs foreign policy experience. So does he reach out to someone, John Kasich? Kasich's already said no, but, you know, you never know. You want to be vice president. It's possible. Does he look for somebody in Florida, which is another swing state? Does he reach out to a notable former military figure to give him to buck him up on the foreign policy edge, which could be a vulnerability for him. There's a lot of factors that go into that, and you have to balance all those out and also want to find someone that you can, you know, run with who's going to be an asset to the ticket. For the Democrats, assuming that Hillary Clinton, and I do think she'll be the nominee, is our nominee. She's got some of that same math. If this comes back to a contest where we're only really dealing with a few states in the Electoral College, then you've also got to think about that. So she's got to think about Ohio, too, possibly. Do you look at someone like Sherrod Brown, who's a sort of a populist U.S. senator from Ohio, kind of a good progressive Rust Belt Democrat? That's a person. The Democrats also need to fire up Latino voters in a number of states. Nevada would be one of them. You want to hang on to Nevada. It's gone Democrat the last few election cycles, but still it's kind of a purple state, not a red or a blue. So do you think about somebody like Congressman Javier Becerra from here in Los Angeles, who was the number three in the House? He's a Stanford Law School graduate. Very bright, very articulate, hard worker, would bring a lot, I think, to an administration that sends a signal to Latinos who have been completely vilified by Donald Trump that, you know, this is an administration that's going to be committed to things that they care about. But there's so much that goes into that. And some of it is just likability. Are you going to be comfortable with this person, you know, serving with them,
right.
Campaigning
yeah,
with them?
Yeah.
As we saw with Bill Clinton and Al Gore. I mean, Al Gore, you'd already had one guy from the South, and he chose another Southerner. And you'd say to yourself, well, God, shouldn't you balance it out? But those two had such a connection, you know, close in age, smart guys, intellectually curious guys, same philosophy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that was a good choice. And then the bus trips, you know, really just generated, you know, but they were able to generate a lot of enthusiasm. I also think Becerra, it's good to hear his name come up. I think earlier they were talking about one of the Castro brothers in Texas who I thought maybe weren't seasoned enough. And obviously Javier has done, you know, he's brilliant. He's very articulate. And I think he would make a very good running mate. So let's shift gears to the Senate. And as you mentioned, there has not been an opening since 1994 or 6, was it, for Boxer?
1992.
And yeah. That was the year of the women, when Boxer and several other women got elected. I think at the time there were two women in the Senate, Barbara Mikulski and Nancy Kassenbaum. And now that has changed dramatically. And if you even go to Boxer's office in Washington, there's a picture from that famous moment when she and five other House members marched onto the Senate when the Senate was considering Clarence Thomas. And so it's definitely, this is a landmark. We're shifting into a new era. But it looks like the front runners in this race are both women. We have Kamala Harris, the Attorney General, who we've talked a lot about on this show, and Loretta Sanchez, the Congresswoman from Orange County, who gained fame in 96 for beating B1 Bob Dornan, one of the most conservative members of the House. And can you explain, so California has a unique thing called the jungle primary. What is the jungle primary?
So California voters a few years back passed a proposition that changed our primary system to one which used to be that the top vote getter in every political party would face off in the general election. Now we have a system where the top two vote getters, regardless of party, face off. And so we've seen this already in a number of legislative races where the top two vote getters were, you know, Republicans or Democrats. We also had this in a congressional race. The seat a couple of years ago that the Democrats thought they could take. What happened, though, was their Democratic candidate, who is now a congressman, Pete Aguilar, is a very dear friend of mine, didn't make the runoff. And the runoff was between two Republicans. So we're getting into this new era. And some people are looking at the Senate race. And if you look at the recent polls, the top two candidates right now in most polls are Democrats. It's Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez. And there's four or five Republicans running. I've lost count. There's so many. And they're all not even breaking double digits. So we could have a situation where we have a fall general election between two well-respected, well-qualified Democrats.
And it's an interesting matchup. Kamala Harris was the former San Francisco district attorney before becoming attorney general. So you have the San Francisco base. And you have, and she's part African American, part South Asian American. And then you have Loretta Sanchez, the Hispanic from Orange County. So the kind of the two power bases, two of the power bases, both from geography and an ethnic point of view, creates an interesting matchup. But, you know, right now Kamala Harris seems to have the edge. And why do you think that is?
Well, you have to remember that Kamala Harris has already won two statewide elections. And even though she didn't have a major opponent when she ran the last time, she ran a very strong advertising campaign. So people have that name ID in their head already. She spent several million dollars on TV against a no-name Republican. So, you know, she's going to start this race with name ID, and people have already voted for her, so they're comfortable. It's very hard for a House member who's only run in a certain geographic district to compete with that kind of name ID. from the get-go, unless you have a tremendous amount of money to get your name out. And the other problem for Sanchez is she just hasn't raised nearly as much money as Harris has in this race. So it's tough to compete. Having said that, in the last poll I saw, she was still pulling about 22% of the vote. And if she carries that into the primary, she will likely make the runoff.
Yeah, I think it's almost, I agree with you on that. So it's almost certain that those are the two we're going to see, given that, what was the numbers I saw? It was something in the neighborhood of 30-something to 20-something, 31-21, 31-22. And so that is very likely. Now, one thing that I think that's helped Harris is she's been kind of tapped since, becoming Attorney General as a rising star in the party. I mean, she had a major role in the 2012 convention. And, if she wins, what do you see her future being?
Well, I think she has a very bright future. And just to be, full disclosure here, I'm a big Kamala Harris fan. I have been a friend of mine for many years and supported her when she ran for district attorney against an incumbent. Nobody thought she was going to win that race. I think she's got a bright future. She's very smart. She's a hard worker. She's not afraid to take on issues, and I think she cares deeply about a lot of issues. And I think when you look at the Senate, she is another new face coming in there in the Senate that's changing generationally. So I think she's going to have a very, very, very strong run there if she wins.
And we've given her, we do an annual show called Heroes and Zeros, and which is about as subtle as it sounds. but we've given her a shout out several times on that, in our annual show for her work to date as Attorney General, both in terms of privacy, but in particular for her advocacy for victims of online harassment and particularly revenge porn. So we think she, I think she's done a great job as Attorney General. And so I think that helps. I think that probably has helped solidify her work. Not only has she been at a statewide level, but she's gotten a lot of attention for what she's done both in the state and national level.
Yeah, I think she's done she's been a strong Attorney General. She's picked some good issues right from the beginning, where she stood up to the settlement that had been negotiated with the banks over the legal foreclosures. And they sort of expected her to roll over and take it. And she was the new kid on the block. And she said, no, I'm not going to do that. And she ended up getting a much better deal for the people of California. And I think so right from the beginning, she's shown that penchant for standing up and trying to figure out, what's the best thing to do and how do I get it done?
And the flip side, for Congresswoman Sanchez, she's on some very important committees, Armed Services and Homeland Security. But unfortunately, a lot of what happens in those committees are oversight, and it doesn't really give, their work often isn't in the front page. And so while she's, a senior member and a respected member of the House, her activity isn't necessarily getting her in the front page, and when it does, it necessarily hasn't always been good.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It's much harder in the House, and especially when you're in the minority,
yes,
to make a big play and to get involved in major legislation. And let's be candid, Congress hasn't done much since the Republicans have taken over. That's not it's gridlocked. So it's harder. But on the other hand, what I'm surprised about is if I were to say that my candidate had one vulnerability, it's national security. And having served on these committees, as Sanchez has, it seems to me that's kind of a natural for her in a time where people are apprehensive. Every night we have headlines about things that are, troubling in the
yes.
world. It's a difficult time. And I'm surprised that Sanchez has not sort of taken advantage of that mantle in a way to talk about those issues, which could be important. Now, she may do that in the fall if she makes the runoff. But it's sort of interesting to me that she has been, and when she has done that, she sort of misstepped. She made some assertion about a very large percentage of people of Muslim faith worldwide being, terrorists, and people immediately pushed back on her that it wasn't credible, and which is kind of a weird thing to get out there on, right? And there's so many other issues that you could talk about from a perspective of somebody who's actually participated in decision making and knows the issues and has traveled and met with people. Maybe she changes that in the fall if she gets another shot, but I think that's been a sort of a failure of her campaign.
And you're right, because if you look at her credentials, she's the founder, I think, of the House Military Caucus for families, people with families in the military. And I think her ex-husband was in the military, and her son is in the military. And so she can play that quite effectively, but to date, I don't know if she has. I've actually seen her talk on cybersecurity and the threat of cyber war in a small forum. And so, that would be something easy to parlay. What do you see as Sanchez's strengths and weaknesses, other than the fact that she can't get, as a House member, she doesn't have the same level of visibility?
Well, I think her one big strength is she's a Latina, and we have a growing number of voters in this state. Latinos are the largest single group now in California, and the voting strength is growing. And so part of her appeal is to say, hey, why don't we elect one of our own? Why don't we have somebody who represents us? Because we have so few representatives at the highest levels from our community. We have just one statewide officer, Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State. And for many years, we had nobody. We had Cruz Bustamante for a little while as Lieutenant Governor. But there's been a lot of frustration with Latinos that we're not able to advance up the ladder, well represented in the legislatures and some city councils. So that's one strength. If she can fire up the community and really get people to get out and vote and take advantage of this this fear and anger that many people feel about being vilified by Donald Trump, that would be a big strength for her. That would help her, could potentially help her prevail. And again, I think that national security issues are big for her, and saying someone who's had experience serving in Congress, as she has, those are all good issues for her. Whether it's enough to carry the day, remains to be seen. And at the end of the day, I think it really comes down to what issues the California voters really care about in November and choosing a U.S. senator. Is it going to be about foreign policy? Is it going to be about the economy? What are the other factors? Right now, it feels like the economy is the big issue. And so it's going to be interesting to see how each of them play to that in November.
And I guess for Harris, it's somewhat of a shift because, law enforcement. How do you speak to the economy in your role as law enforcement? And, that's a messaging shift. And how do you think she's done on that?
I think Harris has, as I said, I think she has one signature accomplishment that speaks volumes about that, and that is this getting this deal that the banks were trying to negotiate with the attorney generals of many states. She blew it up, and she said, this is not enough to compensate the people for the damage that you did with your practices in the in foreclosure and in predatory lending. So I think she's got a hook to talk about that and say, I understand. I'm going to keep pushing on that and make sure that we have safeguards, that we're doing things that will help preserve home ownership. So she's got a little wedge in there, as she does on some other issues. The attorney general gives you a great deal of platform, not just to deal with law enforcement issues, which of course are critical, but environmental issues. And she's taken on some fights, going after the pipeline operator in Santa Barbara after that oil spill. She has sued some counties over their transportation plans and really ruffled some feathers, took on that fight with the environmental organizations to say, if you're going to plan for transportation, you have to account for greenhouse gas emissions, and you have to plan to reduce those emissions. So she's done some groundbreaking things that give her a broader, platform that she could talk about than just law enforcement.
Now, if Trump, given that Trump will be the nominee, a large Latino turnout could definitely create a spike for Sanchez and make the race. I mean, right now, 31-43, I guess, in a field of eight major candidates, I imagine it's going to be much tighter once we get to the fall. And, the turnout, who turns out, is going to be important.
I think that is a very, very valid possibility that you get into the fall and already we are seeing efforts to really take that anger and that concern in the Latino community and focus it and say, hey, we need to vote. We don't vote in numbers that are nearly commensurate with where we should be. And if we get people fired up, someone like Sanchez could absolutely benefit. Although Harris has a lot of very high-profile Latinos backing her. And she's done a good job, I think, with the Latino community in terms of reaching out and taking on some concerns and being accessible. But that's a real possibility that you get a bump and people say, yep, I'm mad at Trump and I'm voting for Sanchez.
And one other issue on that point is, what if Javier Becerra is a nominee? I haven't even looked. Has he endorsed?
In the Senate race, I don't know.
I can look it up quickly, but I would suspect, given that the party itself has endorsed Harris, that Javier is one of the people endorsing, but I'm not sure. That would be a major coup for her to have granted Loretta would benefit by having Javier on the ticket because it would spike turnout. But at the same time, if Javier's endorsed Kamala, that just changes the ballgame in that respect. I don't see him miss it as an endorser.
Yeah, he may have stayed out because, it's the House, that's one of his colleagues, and he may even be with Sanchez. I don't know.
It could be. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to wrap this up, and you can tell us anything else that you're up to. And today is National Geek Pride Day. So all of you have pride in for those of you geeking out today. And if you want show notes on information on Dario and about this race, we have on our blog at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Cyberlaw and Business Report only on cranberryradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyberlaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. NameJet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on Earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, NameJet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to NameJet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. NameJet.com.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, Zo Social, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. Zo Social is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let Zo Social give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to zosocial.com.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart, or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
Now, Dario, you were termed out in the Assembly. Do you have a view whether term limits have been a good thing or a bad thing for California?
I think term limits are a horrible idea. And I think what happened is we have neutered our legislature you know, the voters, there are term limits in a free system. The voters can vote somebody out anytime they want. And you can make the playing field fair if you want to, but just arbitrarily kicking people out is bad because nobody gets institutional knowledge. I mean, the people used to be, I started out as a young staff guy working in the state Senate in the 80s before term limits, and you had people in both houses who were very knowledgeable in both parties on subject matter. And when they ran the committees and they did legislation, was extremely thoughtful and smart. And there was a real effort to try to make policy. It didn't always succeed. It has really just become an institution that's more dominated by special interests, by lobbyists, because the members and the staff don't really know the subject areas, and people were jumping around from committee to committee and thinking about their next elections. The good thing that the voters did, I think, was a couple of years ago we adjusted term limits to say now the old system was you could serve a total of 14 years. You could serve 6 in the assembly and 8 in the state Senate. What we're now saying is you can serve 12 years in either house or any combination. And I think particularly in the state assembly, this is going to be a big improvement for us, because I think that gives the members time to learn, to chair committees, to understand issue areas better, to take a longer view of public policy. I'm very hopeful. I think we're already seeing some benefits from that adjustment. So I would say that if we're going to keep term limits, then having the longer term and the option of staying in one house or the other for 12 years is not a bad thing.
So when, for example, when you're a majority leader, you can only be a majority leader for 2 years because then you were leaving, correct?
I was majority leader about 3 years. I came halfway through my second. Yeah, it was a short time. But for example, prior to that, I was chair of the health committee, and I remained on that committee for all the time I was in the legislature. It was an issue that I was very interested in and remain interested in today, is health care. My tenure as chairman was relatively brief.
And given that this show is about cyber law, and I remember at the time when the term limits went into effect, you know, the internet legislation in the U.S. and in general was at a nascent level, but a lot of it had come from California, and the people who were involved in that legislation, you know, Deborah Bowen, Senator Murray, and others, Jackie Speier, all of them all of a sudden, poof, at the same time, are gone.
Right.
And so you now have zero institutional knowledge on a very critical issue in a very important, you know, at least growing important part of the California economy. And so it was quite troubling. And actually, working with the bar, we created a primer on cyberspace issues for, you know, the new incoming legislators so that they at least could get up to speed somehow. There was some resource for them to turn to. But I think, yeah, in especially in specialized areas of legislation, it's very concerning.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's really had a detriment. And also, in dealing with oversight, which is an important function of the legislature, right? And when you bring, we used to do a lot of oversight, now very little. Because I think people don't understand the value of oversight on agencies. But the other thing is, when you do engage in oversight and you try to take corrective action, some of these agencies, their attitude is, okay, I know you're going to be gone in a couple of years, so I'm going to sit tight and tell you what you want to hear. But once you're gone, there's going to be nobody to hold my feet to the fire, if you will. And I saw that happen a lot. Tony Cardenas, who's now a congressman, was my colleague, was the chair of the budget committee. And Tony did a really great job as budget committee chair bringing in these agencies and really going after them and nailing them down on stuff. And why isn't, you know, why aren't you doing a better job of doing this? Or you got to do this, or we're going to put language in the budget about this. But they all knew that Tony's time was limited. And they, you know, once he was gone, it was like the conversations didn't happen. And that's unfortunate in some of these instances, because there's just nobody to follow up. That's not somebody else's issue. It just gets dropped.
So it's January 20th, 1201. Whose hand is on the Bible, and what California senators are there watching?
Well, my fervent hope is that it will be Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. I think it's probably more likely to be Hillary Clinton right now. I do think at the end of the day that Kamala Harris will be our next U.S. Senator. And so I think that will be our team in Washington, D.C.
Well, there you have it from Dario Frommer, a prediction, I think, one that wouldn't surprise a lot of people. And I think there's a good chance it may happen given this very strange election year. Dario, do you have anything you want to announce, let people know? Are you speaking anywhere or anything you'd like them, like viewers, listeners, to check out?
Yeah, I'm involved with the Unruh Institute of Politics at USC, which is a fabulous program run by an old friend of mine who happens to be a former Republican. His name is Dan Schnur. And they're doing a great job of really teaching kids how to engage in government, how to engage in politics, how to be thoughtful. I'm trying to get folks to look at public service, not just elected politics, but you know, getting into government service as something that's worth pursuing. And so I'm a fellow there, working there with some of my other former colleagues from the legislature and other offices. And it's a great program and something worthwhile to support.
Where can people find that? Is that on the web or is it Twitter?
Yeah, go on the web. That's Unruh Institute of Politics. It's at USC.
And
I should have the address in front of me, but I don't. I'm not being cyber savvy today.
You're also Akin Gump is akingump.com. Do you have a Twitter account yourself or no?
I am not a Twitter guy. No, wow. I'm behind the times.
A tweetless.
Yeah. I'm tweetless.
Articulate but tweetless. But yeah, you know, that's one of those. Yes, if a tree falls in the forest and no one tweets about it, did it happen?
No, that it doesn't exist, right? Did it happen? So,
but I want to thank you very much. It was a great honor to have you. You know, you've had a great career, and I want to thank our mutual friend Mario for helping with this. And so, one other question: there could be another opening in California in the Senate if. In 2018 with Senator Feinstein. Who do you think would be the front runner for that position?
Well, that's going to be another interesting question because it will attract, I think, a wider spread of people. So you've got Secretary of State Alex Padilla, I think would very much like to run for that. He was a staffer for Feinstein, and he's always wanted to go to the Senate. I think he'd be a terrific candidate, as would our mayor, Eric Garcetti. I think Eric is someone who has got a bright future in front of him. He's done a great job leading the city. Yeah, I think he could get in the race. You know, if people who don't make it this year to certain higher offices may decide that they want to come back and give it another try in 2018. So I think it'll be quite an interesting you know, cast of characters running for that seat because the timing is a little bit different. Do people thinking that they're going to run for governor right now, do they decide that they want to go to the Senate instead?
I think that's what it is. I think Gavin seems to be trying to lock up the governor's race, you know, by doing it early.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, it would make in someone like Eric, who I think would be natural in the Senate, more likely, I think, to look that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean, does John Chung decide he'd rather run for the Senate than run for governor? Does someone who's already run statewide three times and has an excellent reputation with the party faithful? I mean, there's a lot of people get in that race. I think it'll be a little different. I was surprised that more people didn't run this year,
for
the
here.
Senate on our side, but I do think that if it comes up again with Senator Feinstein deciding to retire, I think we'll see an even wider field. The good news is we have a lot of great, great people on the bench who could step in and do that job and do it well for California. So that's we have a blessing. Of good candidates and good possibilities there.
I agree. Well, thank you very much, Dario. It's been a pleasure. Best of luck to you. Check out Dario at akingump.com. And he'll be tweeting to you some point in the future.
All right, let me, Bennett, I'll have you show me how to do all that stuff, because I can, you know, I can barely do my email. So,
thanks again, and thank you all for joining us. I wanted to give a shout out, happy birthday to my sister Maureen. This is the day she gets her Medicare card, so it's a big day for her. And I hope you all have a great day. Join us next week for another edition of Cyber Alarm Business Report right here on Cranberry Radio.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Marketing and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.